Welcome everyone to Thriving Through Adversity, Achieving Continuity in Teacher Growth. I'm Justin Bader from the Principal Center, and my co-presenter today is Corey Camp, Director of Professional Learning from SIBME. So welcome, Corey, and thanks for co-hosting with me today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm super excited, and this has definitely been these have been conversations that I know you have been having, as well as we here at SIBME have been having, as we've talked with not just K-12 school organizations, but those who support schools and higher ed universities. Everyone's trying to figure out how do they maintain some continuity. So we've loved the continuity project and being able to support that. And I think that this idea of goals is going to definitely be something that we can stick to and use moving forward.
Yeah, and we'll talk a little bit more about the continuity project at the end, but we have had an ongoing series for several months now, just to guide school leaders through the process of thinking through, you know, whatever disruptions we may face, how can we as leaders take the key actions that we need to keep the work moving forward and to keep people moving forward. And I think that's a great segue into our introduction here, thinking about goals. You know, we have typically some processes that are already in place. And I want to frame our conversation today around the idea of using goal setting, using evidence of achieving those goals to create a sense of continuity when a lot is in flux. You know, we may be asking teachers to engage in new practices. We may be asking teachers to develop new skills. We may have teachers teaching in formats or in modalities that they've never used before. And that can leave people feeling a little bit scattered and a little bit unsettled. And, you know, anytime I think we can find things that maybe are not changing, or at least that are a familiar professional routine, I think that can be so comforting and so, you know, such a source of stability in terms of, you know, of allowing people to move forward. So some of the shifts that we're going to talk about today with goals, I think goals have a particular power to get people on the same page, to get the right things happening, and yet not lead people through a process that makes them feel micromanaged, right? I think when we have a container provided by a goal, when we have some sort of parameter that's set up in terms of a goal, it allows people to exercise, paradoxically, I think, more autonomy. When we have that kind of parameter in place where we say, this is what needs to happen, you have wide latitude within those parameters to figure out how to make it happen. I mean, really, we're creating space. And that can happen at the district level when we're talking about creating autonomy for schools. You know, here's what your reopening plan needs to include, but you have the flexibility to, you know, to pursue that in ways that meet the needs of your particular school community. We can do that at the school level when we're working with teachers to set goals for, you know, for their professional growth, for their classrooms, for their students. And we can do that with students when we say, hey, in this unit, you know, if you're working remotely, if you are learning from home, here is what the final product needs to be. You know, here's what your final work needs to be like, and here are the criteria that it needs to meet. And within each of those containers, we can leave space for autonomy. And I think there's just so much that is professionally and psychologically healthy about cultivating a sense of autonomy in students and staff at the school level that really is, I think, going to be extremely helpful in getting people through this unusual time. So our essential question for today is simply this: how can we maximize teacher growth and school improvement by setting the right kinds of goals? And I think there is a little bit of an assumption built in. Do you want to talk, Corey, about maybe some of the relationship between goals and, you know, maybe some of the anxiety that people might be feeling?
Yeah. Before I became an educator, I studied psychology. That was originally the path I planned to take. And education definitely called me other ways. But, you know, I go back to TJ and I, our COO and I have had several conversations about this, especially this past year, as we think about coaches and instructional leaders in their role. And really, when we are overwhelmed, it's that Maslow's before Bloom's. It's when we are having this overwhelming feeling, there's fear, there's anxiety, there's even some trauma, which we've all been experiencing or know individuals who are going through this, when there's that uncertainty, we really need something to kind of pin ourselves to and find some stability, like you mentioned before. And so again, that autonomy, we still want to give individuals ways to think about this and make this personalized for them and meaningful for them, but we also want to provide some structure. Should they need to really hold on to that structure, or should they use that as kind of their North Star, their guiding element as they move forward? And so this again is where goals, taking these short-term focused goals, taking a process and just saying, we're just going to go back to basics with our processes. These are the essential things that need to happen. And yes, there's so much to think of, but we can't tackle all of a year's worth of decisions in the time that we have. So we'll take it day by day. We'll take it step by step within this.
Very well said. Very well said. So I want to turn it to our participants today and ask you to answer in the chat here. When it comes to teacher goals in particular, we'll talk about other types of goals, but for teachers in particular, what types of goals are teachers in your school or your district, your organization, currently required to set? And I personally was a teacher and principal in Seattle Public Schools, and we had a couple of different evaluation systems. Go ahead and answer in the chat if you would. Speaking from my personal experience, I believe we had to set maybe a student growth goal. You know, there'd be some sort of, you know, pre-test, post-test, or, you know, we'd measure something at the beginning of the year and then again later in the year. So there was something that was focused around student growth. And then there are also, you know, kind of the what I will do to grow as an educator, kind of professional growth goals, often that were a little bit more activity focused. You know, I'll attend this workshop or I'll, you know, learn this new skill. What was it for you, Corey, you know, when you were in the class?
Yeah, we had an expectation of at least one professional growth goal, and they were very much more activity based. It was where do you want to grow, and what are some ways that you can do that? And we had instructional coaches on our campus, and sometimes they supported us with that, and that could be a part of your plan for your professional growth goal. But then I spent a lot of my time, I was a special educator, so I spent much of my days working and designing and working through implementing goals for students that had special needs. And so goals have always been a very deep part. Here at SIDMe, we have goals that are through a framework of what we call objectives and key results. And so that's the structure we use as we develop our goals, all aligned to overwide company and strategic goals. But, and the same thing with our professional goals. We had to have some alignment to the campus improvement plan or the district-wide improvement plans.
Yeah.
Yeah, makes sense. Great things in the chat.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm seeing a lot of kind of almost consensus around a personal growth goal and a student growth goal, or a professional growth goal and a student learning goal. Karai says a SMART goal based on student baseline data. Often we have specific school-wide assessments, or at least grade level specific assessments, like a particular reading. I think we used a couple different reading assessments and would very closely track at the elementary level student growth in reading. Anything else jumping out in the chat that you want to comment on, Corey?
I'm seeing that Amanda here said goals for instructional technology and professional development, service to the college. So a little bit of outreach, it sounds like here. Definitely some goals through some specific frameworks like Danielson or statewide frameworks. TTES, as a former Texan, I'm now based in Ohio, but I know TTES and student growth goals very, very well, because that's what we were working with districts and supporting them in.
Yeah, so, one thing, go ahead, sorry.
Well, I was gonna say, what I'm glad to see is, you know, when I was in the classroom, the professional growth goals weren't as common in schools in our area. And it was definitely something that it was kind of site-based decision on if they required their teachers and staff to have that. And so I love that I'm seeing more and more of that. I'm seeing both of those student growth goals as well as the teacher professional development goals, because we must always be learning, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And I see a kind of a duality here in a lot of the comments around goals for things that we do, you know, activities that we participate in, actions that we take, you know, steps in maybe a strategic plan that has multiple parts, and the types of goals that involve some sort of measurement. You know, did our test scores go up? Did the student advance from this level in reading? And I think we have to keep both in mind. You know, there are a lot of different, you know, kind of schemes and frameworks for thinking about goals. But I think those two in particular are relevant to us today. You know, the things that we do and the things that we measure. And we'll see those come up in a couple of different ways. So today we are going to talk about five specific types of goals and hopefully have a productive conversation about how to best set and manage and think about those kinds of goals. First, we're going to talk about, at a very basic level, just things we need people to do. So just what we're calling low-level action items, you know, like I need everybody to fill out this form, you know, not the kind of thing that anybody went to school for or wakes up in the morning, just jumps out of bed excited to, you know, complete items on a checklist. But, you know, there is a lot of that business at the beginning of the year, and we want to get that done as efficiently as possible and not stress people out over that. And then we can shift into talking about some meaningful kind of starting up the year goals. Corey's going to talk about setting up your online learning space. I'll talk about some group goals and maybe things we get people to do as a team or department. And then we will talk about the kind of traditional teacher goal setting process and the school improvement goal setting process. And I think within all of those, we want to really focus on the, you know, the needs of the moment. I think, you know, we're probably not going to, you know, to design a whole bunch of new processes this year. We're not going to come up with a whole new approach to school improvement planning and teacher evaluation. We're probably not going to revise the contract unless that was going to happen this year anyway. You know, this is a year where, like, I personally, I don't know if anybody else feels this way, but I personally do not want to create or invent any more work for myself this year. Or, you know, if I'm a principal, I want to keep things as steady as possible because there are already so many things that are on our plate that we need to deal with as far as changes. So with that, let's go ahead and jump right into the first low-level action items. And I'd like to ask you to think about this in not very ambitious terms, like just what are the low-level things that need to get done? So let us know in the chat, what are some action items or some just basic, you know, everybody has to do this and check it off tasks that people have to do at the beginning of the year. And it's not just kind of a make sure you take care of that. It's like actually, we have to keep track. We have to make sure that everybody does this particular thing. What are some of those in your school? Go ahead and let us know in the chat. Okay, yeah, we've got, once school starts, attendance. We've got an orientation, some testing. People have to do their goal setting, safety training, Title IX training. Yeah, a lot of this stuff, we have to do it because of compliance. You know, I'm sure there's a Title IX training that you have to do at the college level. Emergency information, yeah. Let's see, what else we've got? School development plan, yeah, there are a lot of, substitute plans, lesson plans, yep. Placement testing, online training, mandated by like the district, FERPA and HIPAA training, safety training. Yeah, a lot of this, and notice a lot of this—
Screenings for students, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of this kind of falls outside of teaching and learning. It's just kind of the, like the logistics and the legalities of opening school. Let's see. Yeah, if you can't see the chat, just look within the webinar app here. You should see a button to open the chat window.
Oh, I think I see what some of it is. Yeah, if you want to make sure in the chat when you respond that it says all panelists and attendees. I have not been keeping an eye on that, but I'm seeing a lot of people are responding to just Justin and I. So, go ahead and all panelists and attendees. There's a blue drop down right above the where you type your message in the chat.
Yeah, thank you, Maria. Good catch there. Thank you, Corey. Yeah, so there are lots of things like this, and you know, technology training, safety training, things like that that come in that just need to get done. And again, like this is not what any of us majored in. Nobody went to school saying, you know what, I really want to become an educational leader so that I can ensure compliance with bloodborne pathogens. Right. Training mandates, you know, like this is not the the kind of stuff that that gets us out of bed in the morning, but we do need to get it done, and we need to get it done efficiently. We need to keep track of it, and we need to make sure that it doesn't take away from that higher level work that we're here to do. So one just quick recommendation that I have for you when it comes to those very, very low level things is, you know, if this has been the kind of thing that typically you handle on a clipboard, that maybe you run around and knock on everybody's door, or some member of your staff does that and say, hey, can I get your signature on this or whatever, I want to encourage you to start to track those things electronically. And you know, if you are more of a tech savvy person, you probably have wanted to do that for a long time anyway. And you've had a lot of people who maybe in your staff who do you have people, let me know in the chat, do you have people on your staff who like just really do not want to do anything with technology? They want to do it the old fashioned way. Let me know, just give me a yes in the chat if you have pushback like that. Anytime you come up with a better system, if it involves technology, maybe people are hesitant to use it. I think this is a year where we really need to take advantage of some of those efficiencies. You know, like if this could be a Google Form rather than a clipboard, like, yeah, we have a reason now to not pass around a clipboard, to not run around and have all these face-to-face conversations. And I think when we do that, when we make some of those shifts, we actually give people a little bit more control, a little bit more autonomy. You know, if somebody comes and knocks on your door and says, hey, I need this from you right now, they're interrupting you. They're not giving you the flexibility to do that on your own schedule. And I think back to the idea of autonomy and accountability within, you know, within a container that creates space for people to, you know, to do what they need to do. If we can handle some of these low-level items electronically, I think we're going to be in a much better place in terms of documentation, and it's just going to be less hassle for people who are maybe fearful of face-to-face meetings, maybe in enough Zoom meetings and not enough phone calls anyway. I think this really can be a year where we shift some of that low-level stuff to technology and just say, you know what, we're going to save our face-to-face conversations for the things that really need to be a face-to-face conversation.
Well, and I think that's a great point and I'm seeing in the chat a lot of folks saying, Kimberly said, you know, before COVID, this was definitely an issue. Those who are wanting to stay away from technology, and you'll just have to come find me to find out if I did it. But we're really seeing because there's so many things that we're all trying to readjust and redesign for and tackle and just manage the day-to-day things on and the changes that are happening. We really want to reserve that face-to-face time for the things that can't happen electronically and asynchronously or on our own time, that autonomy piece. But then that also gives me more time as an instructional leader to save that face time for connecting and making sure that my staff and my students are okay on that a stress level, that they're feeling okay mentally. I can really connect on the relationship level with them instead of, why haven't you done your training yet? When are you going to be finishing your training? Have you even started your training? Those are things we don't want to add to those personal conversations as we get going. So I think this really does, you begin tracking this electronically and giving, you're not having to go hunt and find. And so it saves time for you, but then it also allows you to focus more on your staff and relationships as well.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Corey, because I think we're used to having informal interactions that kind of build those relationships and keep us connected to one another. But if we're not really supposed to be within 6 feet of each other, we're always wearing masks, you know, there are these some things that are going to be strange. I think there's a very real risk that if we keep our focus on those low-level tasks and don't protect those face-to-face interactions for relationship building and higher level stuff, there's a very real chance that it could be, you know, a mostly negative interaction or a mostly, you know, I need this from you kind of interaction. And I think, you know, school leaders have all had that experience of, you know, a staff member that never comes and talks to you unless they have a complaint. They never come and talk to you unless they need something from you. And I think we've got to be very intentional this year about protecting that face-to-face time for those, you know, those professional interactions, those positive interactions that really build those relationships and, you know, and really just keep us unified as a staff, so we're not, you know, chasing people for paperwork and things like that.
Make them feel supported and not micromanaged and all of those pieces, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And I see Patricia's comment here in the chat here. You know, people are getting a little bit overwhelmed by having to use lots and lots of different platforms. So I think we've got to be strategic as leaders too, of, you know, how many different kinds of things are there. I saw a discussion the other day, you know, are we going to use Google Classroom? Are we going to use Seesaw or Canvas or all these different things? And I think there's a good point there that, you know, around the learning curve and empathy that, you know, just more technology is not always, you know, more, you know, different systems that people have to work with is not always a good thing. So we've got to really be strategic about that, you know, about some of those choices.
Yeah, anytime that we can find a way to track that in systems that we already have, right, that makes sense and maybe can model some of those spaces that teachers can be using in their own practice or with their own students as well.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So one that comes to mind for me that I remember doing every year as a principal, and it would always be a pain, was bloodborne pathogens training. Oops, skipped it here. Do you have to do bloodborne pathogens training in your school? Just give me a yes in the chat if you have to do bloodborne pathogens training. I assume that's some sort of state law in most places. And it was all like, bless our nurse. We just had the most fabulous school nurse. She would always make sure that we did this. It was required. She had to keep documentation and turn it in. I was very grateful that she took care of that, but it was always one of those things that took up basically like a whole staff meeting or, you know, a whole hour during our in-service days. And then of course, what happens in that setting is somebody can't be there, right? Somebody says, oh, I had to go to the doctor's appointment. And it's like, well, okay, you still have to have the training. So then the nurse would have to go and, you know, kind of redo that training for just that one person. Lately, I've seen that a lot of things like this happen now, and people are saying this in the chat already, happen electronically. Like there's some sort of online training, there's some sort of video module that people can do and just check it off online. And I think what we do have to be careful about is documentation, you know, because that was one of the big pieces our nurse was held accountable for. Is like, it's not enough to just say, I did a training. You have to actually make sure that everybody went through it. And in terms of autonomy, one of the things that I think we can do to kind of balance that, you know, that kind of freedom and accountability is to say, look, you get it done when you need to get it done. All I need is your certificate. So you watch it, you upload your certificate. And I think we've got to be careful about the total amount of that we're being asked to do. Christopher says, I think that's a great point that, you know, that we really need to be selective about this. But when we decide, when we say this is something that just has to get done, we've got to provide as much flexibility on that as possible. And what I've got here just as a kind of an example here is I've created a goal in SIVME, in the software provided by Corey's company, for complete bloodborne pathogens training. I personally would be very happy if we never had to have a faculty meeting about bloodborne pathogens training ever again. And, you know, if we could just make that the kind of thing that we don't have to meet in person about. And what I've got here in this particular screenshot is a dashboard that shows me who has done this and who hasn't. And I don't have to run around with the clipboard. I don't have to ask people to make me a photocopy of their certificate. You know, they just upload it and we don't really have to mess with it so we can get to the higher level stuff. Corey, any comments on that particular interface or that kind of way of making it bold? We're going to talk about higher level stuff in a second. I just want to make sure we get.
Yeah. Again, I think it's where everybody we've got kind of two things happening here. One, there's this task list that I kind of create electronically for my staff so they can get to it when they need to get to that. And I do see a lot of, we were doing online modules back when I was in the classroom 10 years ago. And, but I still had to print or email my certificate to the nurse. And if I didn't print it for her, she had to print it and download it. And so there's still that evidence piece that was required to be collected. So this is here. It's very easy that nurse is able to log in and see Sheila's finished it, but she hasn't sent me her certificate yet. Or with the way that we've got goals set up in our module in SIVME, you attach the evidence directly to it. So I just need to click on Sheila now that she's completed this, and I can download her certificate from that course. I can even see some reflections. So the way that we've designed these, and we'll talk about this a little bit further, is it's more than just that checklist piece. It is also about how to completing this task or going through this process or making progress towards this goal, how is it improving your practice, changing your practice, or how are you showing that that's been completed? I think this could be, and there's several ways that you can set these up, which we'll show also in an example, but anywhere where you've got these low level activities where it's just there's different things I need to go and maybe watch the video for my librarian on the new tech tools and I need to check out my devices, those things can all be added in here. So you can quickly see where everybody is along the line of those procedural pieces they need to do at the beginning of the year.
I was delighted to see that this is an actual product you can buy on Amazon. The I survived another meeting that should have been an email ribbon. And certainly, you know, we've all heard the phenomenon of being zoomed out and feeling like, okay, I've been in enough meetings. I just cannot talk to any more people on my webcam. And, you know, shifting things to email is great, but at the same time, we have to be careful of email overwhelm that, you know, we can end up with, you know, 100 emails from staff members with certificates attached, or 100 emails from different staff members of different things that we need to do. So I very much believe in streamlining and kind of keeping things all in one place to kind of keep that smooth and simple for people. So we will shift into a higher gear here in a second, but I just want to emphasize that, you know, when we have a good system for those low-level things, people know I am not going to have to attend a meeting. I am not going to have to deal with a whole bunch of emails if I can just, you know, go into the system and do what I need to do there and upload that. So having kind of a reliable format, I think, is very powerful. All right, let's think in terms of a little bit of a higher level. So this is the time of year when teachers are starting to maybe come back and work in their classrooms, or maybe starting to think about how they're getting set up for the year. We hear a lot of people working to update their curriculum right now and thinking about what might be different about that as we start the year, perhaps virtually or possibly partially virtually. So let's talk about professional prep for the year. And I think, Corey, you were gonna take some of this section here, but let us know in the chat, what are some of the key professional preparation steps that teachers need to take to get ready for the school year? And thinking in particular about this school year, what you might be asking people to do to get ready, or what you know that people are doing to get ready in terms of their classroom, in terms of their, you know, their core professional work, not the compliance stuff, where it's kind of a little bit of a higher level now. What is it that people are working to get set up here? Let us know in the chat. And Corey, if you want to jump in here, I think my computer is sticking a little bit, so I'm going to try to get
it. Is it? I was just noticing you're a little garbled there. I'm not sure if anybody else hears that, but let me get my, I can share it on my screen here in a moment. What is it that your teachers are needing to do? And I saw some of you responding in the chat as we got started, is that you're having to prepare your first 3 weeks of lesson plans, or you're giving those assessments remotely. We just did, my youngest is going into kinder next year, and so I just administered her kindergarten screening. Our teachers did a wonderful job doing it was about a 20-minute video as they walked parents through the process. We had to print a couple of things, and then we put the results in a Google form. So that screener has now been done. But go ahead and put it in the chat for us, and Justin, I think, is going to work on to see if that audio on his end is something he can get. But thinking about, Monica says, initially understanding the online platform schedule for the fall, preparing for guided reading groups, definitely some things that we are all looking at. And then Justin, there's a question in the chat from Janelle. In terms of handling low-level action items, does this apply to how you communicate with your assistant principals? And I think it can definitely be anybody. It doesn't have to just be those things for the teacher. We're going to see a school improvement example here that's with the leadership team. So this includes anybody that you are responsible in your organization for supporting and getting them up and running through the year. So definitely those individuals as well. Many of you are sharing in the chat the LMS that you are learning and having to create and design things for, get things ready to go. So Justin, I'm going to, is your screen still sticking and you want to move to the next slide? I can share if not. Let me share my screen here. Technology, it's always fun. Justin and I have both been struggling with low connection speeds lately. And so it might be one of those moments. So one of the big things, and what many of you are saying, is we're really kind of getting ready for the return of learning, wherever that might be. For many of us, that is online, or at least a portion of that online. We're looking at, even if we're returning into the classroom, integrating more technology into our learning. So when we do have to go remote again, should we have spikes in our area of the virus and we need to go back to online learning, we've already, students are already familiar with that space. We've already got some things there. So I think this is one of those areas that we definitely, regardless of what your back to school plan is and continuity of learning plan is, online has a piece of it. And this is usually the part also that teachers are still kind of grappling with. How do I transfer what I've done, the instruction, my delivery methods, how I formatively assess to an online space? And a lot of teachers that I worked with in the spring, just setting up their space for success, organizing their content, determining what things would be on video versus a live meeting versus a discussion, were all considerations that they had to make and fail forward through many of them. So really thinking again, this is an example of every one of our staff members who will be facilitating learning with our students this year needs to have that ready to go, but they all can work at their own pace for this. And so this one provides a little bit of structure for your teachers as they get ready and can provide some consistency across the campus in ensuring that everybody's teacher webpage is updated. Everybody, maybe we've identified some campus-wide systems and routines as far as when we are going to publish our content. So our My Children's School, it was every teacher had their own time for publishing their content until about the third or fourth week when the campus came back and decided as teams we would decide. So most teams chose by 9 p.m. the evening before any new online content, lessons, videos, tasks, assignments would be published so that students who are working from home could jump online whenever they were ready first thing in the morning, which was perfect for my early risers. They get in there at 6 a.m. because they want to be done before mid-morning snack and be playing the rest of the day. So this is an example of almost a checklist of these are the things that we need to do. We need to think again about systems and routines, but through that online setting, thinking about classroom expectations for the online settings. We already have these things for our own in-person settings, but just helping teachers remember this is another dimension to consider and to think about. How are we going to organize our content? Is our teacher webpage updated? Maybe we're considering adding some videos. Maybe we're doing a virtual meet the teacher, so I need to make sure that everybody's prepared for that. And I could set some specific deadlines for some of these action items. But again, teachers are able to complete these all in a day if they've got the time and they've got everything they need, or they can move forward. And then you'll see at this on this goal here, the last three items are evaluation items where about 3 to 6 weeks into the school year, we are coming back individually and checking on, are these new systems and routines, these expectations that I've set forth, the way I've organized my classroom the start of this year, is it working for my students on a few different levels, both in student compliance? Are they complying with the expectations? Are they turning things in when they're supposed to? Are they able to find the things they need to find? Participation and student success. So it can wrap in nicely with those goals within that piece. So taking a look at the chat, Jenny, you asked what's the system, the platform for this organization system. So this is within our platform, SIDME. SIDME is an online learning space primarily focused at professional learning for teachers. We have some individuals who use it with students, but this is part of our new goals feature that allows you to outline processes or even set personal professional goals. So this is more of a process. These are the activities that we all need to go through to make sure that we have all of our bases covered as we get ready for the school year. We'll look at some more professional or personal-based goals. But here's what's great, again, about taking both the low-level items and some of these other pieces into an online space is as a school leader, it's easy for me to then be able to see where I might need to provide some support, where I might need to reach out, and who's got it. So maybe, you know, Corey's already on her way to getting ready for her classroom. And if I get a question from Sheila about what would be some good examples of routines, I can refer Sheila over to Corey and build a little bit more collective efficacy and collaboration on my campus. What are some other things that we're thinking? What would you maybe add to any of the things that we are thinking about teachers needing to do as we begin for the school year? And then I'm going to do a demo for you and this module here in just a moment. Go ahead and respond in the chat. And it looks like Justin's still getting his audio back up and running. So let's talk about some additional goals that you might need to complete. And so one of the things, and TJ, my colleague here at Sydney, and I have talked many times about the opportunity that we have to really lean in on the idea that we are so much better together. In fact, Sydney did an entire conference called the Better Together Conference, and focused on transforming professional learning. So the screenshots that you've seen Justin and I sharing do come from within our platform. There's a whole module called the Goals module. And here you are able to, individuals, as an individual teacher, this is where I can come and create those personal professional goals, or I might, you know, even put in some student growth goals within this space. But it's also where, as a leader, I can create goals for others or set up a system and even a template. So I'd like to talk about the idea that as we begin designing instruction with this online space, whether that's hybrid or fully remote that we're looking at, being a part of our new dimension in our instructional classroom, that as teachers working together is really going to be the best way to accomplish this. So what we're going to do here is I'm going to create a template goal that my teams of teachers can use to co-plan their blended units. And by blended, I mean online, offline, asynchronous, synchronous, throughout the year. They're not going to be able to tackle everything, but maybe they can accomplish the first 3 weeks, that first unit together. And I really want my teachers to be working together as they do this. So I'm going to create a goal that they can use to rethink how their instructional units look. And Justin, welcome back. I see that you're back on with us. So if you've got anything to add as I go ahead and add this in here, but thinking about the process that I would want my teams to go through as they look at the redesign of their instruction, the first thing I want them to do is look at their existing lesson plans. Again, starting with what we already know, with what we have that works. And as they do this, I might give them a little bit of structure in this so they can be fully autonomous, but maybe I want them to consider the strengths of the existing plan, where there were some weaknesses in that plan, remind them to look at the skills and learner behaviors that are essential for meeting the success criteria. Justin, if you've got anything, go ahead and add it in here, but I'm going to save this one and I'll add two more action items that we can discuss as we go through this.
Good deal. No, I'm just happy to be back. So thank you for pressing on when my computer shut down, but lots of great participation here. Thank you so much, everyone, for bearing with me through that. So let's see. I think Corey, and you can just continue to be the screen sharing person. What I really appreciate about this while you're setting that up is just the capturing of the thinking in advance that eliminates the need for a lot of the kind of confusion and kind of back and forth. You know, when this is really a design process that you're going through here to think about, you know, what does this process really look like, and how can we set everyone up for success by thinking through some of these key items. So let's see. Obviously, I missed what you said as you were setting this up here.
Yep.
But you're identifying the different relevant evidence sources. And we'll talk a little bit more about video later on, but you're really designing a process that, that teachers can go through in their teams to plan that unit.
Yeah. So, and that's the thing that again, this is, I can't be in every one of those meetings and help make those instructional decisions with all of those team members. And I don't really want them doing this on their own and becoming more overwhelmed and frustrated. So I've outlined a process to help them go through those initial stages. And then you'll see here that the last step is for them. They need to determine with the new learning sequence, what things are we maybe going to do a model video of, what things will be live, what activities, can we use a Khan Academy video possibly for this? And so they're outlining all those materials and then they are going to divide and conquer. They're going to essentially create what I call a punch list of everything that needs to happen and identify which team members, you know, maybe you've got somebody who's really great at creating, you know, quizzes or Kahoots, and that's one of the tools and ways activities you want them to engage. Or you've got someone else who really has beautiful, engaging PowerPoints or slide decks, and so they can create the slides that, of course, we would all use those materials, but we can modify them for our own students. You could decide as a team, and this was something, again, that my child's fourth grade team did. Each day, the mini lesson was pre-recorded and posted, but a different teacher from the team did that mini lesson each day. It wasn't always just Mr. Mullenkamp, which I think was awesome because they're learning from different teachers, different perspectives, and then they still met one-on-one with their teacher during that live piece. So this is a goal that's designed to get the process started. It can be rinsed and repeated as many times as you want because it is a template, and anyone who's the team leader or the instructional coach can click the use button, and now they can create this as a group goal because not one person's going to go along this path. It's everybody working together. And let's say that this is the eighth grade constitution unit. Because now that Hamilton's out, TJ and I have also talked a lot about this, that we maybe want to incorporate some new things. And we want to think about with everything that has happened in our country as we look at diversity and all of those pieces, we want to start to redesign that. So the deadlines can now be added to these. I can edit these here and specify when we need to have this first thing done and share this with my team. And then I have to actually add my group. So I'm going to add the Justin in here. I'm going to go this way. And maybe I want to be in this group. And we've got Sheila and Devin that we will also add. So we're the eighth grade social studies team. I can also add as a collaborator, maybe I want to add my campus administrator in here. Thomas Hoffman was looking for you.
Yeah, he may not be in that one.
He may not be in this one. There he is, TJ Hoffman. And so I want him to just be able to review our process overall. And so I've got this all set up. I've got our deadline set because we need to have this ready before school starts on the 19th. So let's have it ready by the 15th so we all have a good plan to go. And now this has been assigned to all of those individuals and we're ready to begin moving with it. These individuals get a notification that a new goal has been created, so that reduces the amount of emails that I have to send and all of those other pieces, and we can begin working together as a group or independently throughout this lesson. All right, questions? I see some things in the chat. Let me open up that chat box. Yes, your audio is much better now.
Good deal. Good deal.
Perfect. So here's another key thing about the having this single place to be able to do all of these things is everything is in one place. I've got my individual goals. I've got my school level goals. I've got my instructional team member goals, the improvement plan goal here that I have all in one place. Justin, do you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, just I think, you know, we've already talked about the kind of learning curve of multiple systems. And, you know, sometimes we have different, you know, different things that some things will have as links, some things will have as documents, some things will have as photos or video. And, you know, to me, the appeal of having everything in one place is simply that you don't have to think about where it is. Like, everybody just already knows, you know, our unit plans, our, you know, student work samples, you know, it all goes into, you know, into our goals here as evidence. And it also creates kind of a dashboard. You know, I can kind of see what's left that needs to be done, whether that's something that I need to do, a team needs to do, different staff members need to do, so that, again, we're not running around with a clipboard. We're not knocking on people's door and saying, hey, I need your whatever. You know, it really is a single place to see what's done, what's not done, and who needs to do it.
Yeah. And as you can imagine, as you begin having these various types of goals, especially once the school year starts and we begin those student growth goals and those personal goals, and as coaching commences on our campus, once everybody gets into the start of the year, it can become overwhelming that you've got all of these various goals happening here. So one of the great things about the goals module is you can create categories and then filter what you see based off of those categories. And same for teachers. They might be looking just for their student growth goals that they've created, or they want to go straight to those required action pieces. So you can have different goals, categories set up. And then again, you've got different types of goals. Some goals are going to be a group effort that we're all responsible for lifting. Others are going to be individual goals because I'm the only one who has this particular goal because of the unique students I have, or we all need to follow a process, but at our own path and in our own place. And so you can have individual goals, account-wide goals. And then there's times where you're going to have goals like that lesson planning example that you want to rinse and repeat, or you maybe want to, you create a goal for your new staff members as they come in to your school as employees. You might have an onboarding process for them. You've got some required action items that they need to complete. You want them to watch your campus vision video, respond to a survey. You can set that whole process up so they can move through that piece independently or in addition to the face-to-face things you have with them. So I think that flexibility really makes it nice in however you're taking your goals electronic.
Yeah, you know, a couple of examples that just occurred to me, Corey, there for template goals. I'm thinking about, you know, the safety committee that has to, you know, do a report once a month on safety issues that they find. That could be a template goal so that they design it once, just like you design a form once, and then they, you know, complete that every time they meet. A PLC team, you know, a PLC meeting where there's a, you know, a reflection sheet that needs to be filled out, or a log, or a, you know, some sort of process that people need to go through and submit evidence. That could be a template goal because it's reusable over and over again, correct?
Yes. So you can, every time you're ready to use that, and let me escape out of this full screen and show you. So my social studies team took that template and they are ready to redesign their unit. And so now it's available for any of my team members to come in and use. So I could see kind of the progression. They'll see this as a template. They can click on it, click use, and adjust it for themselves as a team. So those are designed to be used over and over by multiple individuals within your account, or a single individual that it definitely matches, like your safety team.
And I think we tend to put things like the safety team or the PLCs in like totally different silos and say, well, you know, do a, I don't know if you saw the meme going around that was like, you know, parents are getting instructions from the school, you know, do the Kahoot and the Zazzlezort and upload it to the Blorp. And, you know, like it just gets to be a lot to keep track of. Mm-hmm. And if the low level stuff like safety committee log can go in the same kind of format and same kind of system that some of the higher level stuff goes in, I think we really flatten that learning curve for people who, you know, maybe are already kind of at their limit for how many different things they want to get into anyway, where, you know, like we're teaching routines and habits that just make everything faster and easier.
Yeah. And again, you've got these due dates. So some of these are going to be short term. They need to happen, you know, in the first 3 weeks. And maybe that's a template that I use every 3 weeks. I kind of get it up and running. And some things are going to be year long, like our teacher annual goals, right, Justin?
Yeah. Should we talk about that?
Yeah, let's talk about it. Go ahead.
All right. So for the teacher goal setting process, and this is kind of my main area of interest, is teacher professional growth and instructional leadership. You know, I think there of course are going to be some things that are different this year, but I think this is probably not the best opportunity to just totally overhaul our system and to, you know, develop a new contract around teacher evaluation and goal setting. You know, I think for the most part, we want to stick with what we have and, you know, make only the changes that, you know, that we need to in order to meet the practical demands that we're facing, to streamline things, to really focus on the work that needs to be done and not burden people with process. You know, I think people feel burdened by so many different things right now. If we can streamline process, let people divide the work. You know, I love it when people set team goals. You know, our professional growth goal this year as a team. Well, great. If you set that goal as a team, then that's, you know, one goal instead of three, four, or five different people setting totally different goals. They can support each other. They can, come up with, you know, appropriate forms of evidence together. There are so many different great things that happen when people can work as a team. But I think what we want to keep the focus on is the needs of the moment. And if you want to go ahead, Corey, to developing new skills rapidly, you know, there are always, kind of jokes in the goal setting process about, you know, like, I want to take a course in underwater basket weaving. And, you know, we kind of make fun of the goals that seem like, okay, why do you really need to know that? Why are you focused on that? You know, what are the real priorities? You know, this is a time when we're going to have to worry about anybody setting an underwater basket weaving goal this year. I mean, people really are aware of what they need to learn to meet their students' needs. There is the potential. One thing I wanted to really acknowledge and put on the table that we should be okay with is the potential for the goals that teachers feel most passionate about, you know, their own kind of need to know, their own desire and really need to develop new skills in a particular area to serve their students, say in a virtual or hybrid setting. There's the potential for those to be misaligned with whatever school improvement planning we did back in, say, February. And I'm thinking about our school improvement planning timeline. If we just updated our plan before the pandemic, you know, there's a very, very high likelihood that a lot of that stuff just needs to go out the window. And maybe we're not going to revise the plan, but we're going to leave it. And if we had a whole bunch of things that we were going to do, this is the time to say, it is okay if your professional growth goals for what you need to do right now for your students have nothing to do with the kind of now pie in the sky goals that we set in January or February for our whole school. Like, let's be okay with that so that we can focus on what our students need right now. So let me ask you that in the chat. What do you think our students need from us right now? What new capabilities do... Oh, good. I have a slide for this. What new capabilities do teachers need to develop in order to meet their students' needs? What do students need from us? Let us know in the chat, and I'll be eager to see your responses. What do they need from us? One of the things that I heard loud and clear toward the end of the last school year was just the checking in. You know, we need to call our students. We need to ping them, you know, regularly until we hear from them. We need to make sure that we don't leave any student behind in terms of, you know, if they're not showing up for virtual classes or if they're not doing any work, you know, we need to not let them slip through the cracks. Oh yes, this is another huge one that I'm hearing. Louise says social emotional skills. Yes. Patricia says consistency. Yeah, so much on social and emotional learning. Like, I'm hearing more on that than I ever had. And I think that is a right on target concern.
Again, Maslow's before Bloom's, right? So we've got to really, everybody's dealing with things very differently. And so it's exciting to see that on everyone's list. I'm also seeing, you know, I hear a lot about that family engagement piece as well, that reaching out part and how do I support families be successful in supporting their child while they're learning at home? What are the skills that I maybe need to learn about online learners so I can help prepare and teach routines and procedures so my students can be successful online learners. These are things we're learning for ourselves as well as teachers. How can I be successful working where I'm not in front of students 8 hours a day, but I've got some online time, I've got some offline time, managing all those pieces.
Absolutely. Well, let's zip through a couple of considerations here around the goal setting process. Again, you know, if you can do some of this thinking in in advance and design it into your goals listing here. You know, what do I need people to do? Well, I need them to fill out, you know, this reflection form. I need to set up a one-to-one call with them. Maybe we're going to do those on Zoom this year because we're not meeting in person yet. One thing that you can set up for yourself to make this easier, if you do meet with people individually, is you can set up a Calendly or some sort of electronic calendar where you don't have to negotiate over email with when the best time to meet with each person is, you know, and that often results in double booking and the conflicts and things like that. So, you know, set up a Calendly, set up an easy online calendar where other people can just go to a link and make an appointment with you. Lay that out in your goals system there. And then when you do that, you can go into the next slide there, Cora, you have a dashboard for who has done what. You know, if there are two steps to do right now, that's all I have in my dashboard. And Sheila has done those two steps, it's gonna say 100%. If, you know, Darina has done none of them, it's going to say 0%. So I know, you know, if I do need to reach out to people, I know who to reach out to very quickly. And I can also get a sense of kind of what my overall progress toward completing those steps is. Let's talk briefly about different forms of evidence, because, you know, we may not be meeting. I know a lot of large districts are not starting the year in person, but we don't want to put off our core instructional leadership work until that point in the year when we actually can meet in person and can get into classrooms. And even then, we may be discouraged from physically getting into classrooms. So a couple of things around gathering evidence of practice, just back, there you go. Gathering evidence of practice when we're not physically in classrooms. I think there's tremendous potential for using video. There's tremendous potential for just having conversations about teacher practice that we can do even if we're not physically able to get into classrooms. And there's tremendous potential in looking at student work, you know, just a PDF or a photo of some writing that students did or a project that students worked on. We can be creative about this. We do not have to say, well, I guess teacher evaluation is out the window. Oh, I guess coaching is out the window because I can't physically get into classrooms because I would be a vector for something. So I really want to challenge us to think in terms of multiple forms of evidence, to think flexibly about evidence, and to think about what is going to lead to the kind of reflective conversations that ultimately are the point of this, right? The point of getting into classrooms in person is not to check off an item that's, you know, on a checklist that says, oh, I got into classrooms today, right? It's to have that conversation about professional growth. And we have the ingenuity and we have the creativity to have that conversation virtually if we need to. I think we cannot let ourselves off the hook for this just because we've got so much else going on. We have the opportunity absolutely here to have better professional conversations than ever before. So I don't know. I'm on a little bit of a soapbox here, Corey.
I'm trying really hard not to add to the soapbox as I look at the time that we have for today. But these are the conversations I have a lot with. Part of my role here as Director of Professional Learning is I'm a bit of an implementation coach in how to use the SIBME platform and the online collaboration tools to think about how we do our work. And a lot of instructional teams are thinking, okay, how do I take the in-person observations and the in-person support, pre and post observation conversations, whether as an admin or a coach, virtual? How do I just set that virtual cycle up? But then once I have it figured out and where and how I'm going to do that, the next question is, how do I look at teaching and learning? What are all the things? And the good news is, if we're doing any type of online instruction, it's more visible now, I think, than it was before. In the past, if I wasn't in there during the observation to hear that student conversation, it might not have been captured anywhere. Well, now students are having online discussions, or they're putting things in a Flipgrid. They're doing videos themselves. Teachers are recording because they have to get that. That's the only way they have to give some of the delivery out. And so we definitely have some more avenues, but like you said, Justin, I think it's important that as teams we come together and think creatively and list out the various ways that we can observe, not just teaching, but also learning in these new tools that we have today.
Well, yeah, and in the interest of time, let's skip through school improvement goals, because I think we've already talked about quite a bit of that. We talked about notifications a bit, and then let's talk just to wrap things up about video. Let's go to 32 there. Around common forms of evidence. I think, you know, we are just starting to scratch the surface as a profession of the potential of video, but we have so many rich options when it comes to evidence. You know, if the evidence is not just going to be me physically in the classroom observing, what are some options that people have as far as other forms of evidence that can be the basis for those professional conversations?
Yeah, and I think one of the things, a lot of the teachers I worked with at the start of the emergency instruction were going, I don't know how to deliver instruction to just a green dot on my laptop device. And I don't, you know, how do I be responsive if I've got no one on the other end? How do I create engaging content? And then as they watched those videos, it was, oh man, I wonder, did I always do those things with my hands? That was usually what I was wondering about my videos. And they can begin to have really strong reflective conversations as well as those collaborative conversations to really think about the level of instruction and delivery that we're providing for our students and how we're shaping those learning experiences.
Yeah, very well said. Yeah. So I want to encourage everyone to continue to stay engaged in this discussion of how we reopen schools, how we create a sense of continuity. So if you are not already part of our continuity project, you can go to principalcenter.com/continuity. And we are posting all kinds of resources. We've done at least 5 or 6 previous sessions on different aspects of creating that continuity as an instructional leader. And you can, again, find those and log in at principalcenter.com/continuity. And I also want to encourage people to actually take this for a test drive and play around with the new goals module. This is, by the way, this is brand new, hot off the presses. Design work that's been done within SIBME to allow people to not only manage their coaching interactions, their teacher evaluation interactions, and you know, classroom videos, which I think was kind of the original and core function of SIBME, but really to think through everything that needs to get done, whether it's a low level, you know, everybody do the bloodborne pathogens training, or a very high level, let's collaboratively revise our strategic plan. Everything in between can happen in one place. So Corey, what do people do if they want to give SIBME a try and see how that might work for their school?
Yeah, so you can very simply start your own kind of self-paced 30-day trial, but I encourage you to go to SIBME.com and reach out to us, contact us, because we can make sure that the things that you're wanting to test drive SIBME for are all there. We can give you a little bit more of a guided trial so you're not just figuring things out. SIBME's pretty intuitive as it is. We are both web and mobile-based. But if you're thinking about this for a specific use case on your campus or in your organization, we'd love to have just a quick conversation with you and make sure you're all set up with that for a free trial. And we do offer free trials. You can also take a spin by joining our Better Together. And TJ, I'll have you put the link to the Better Together conference. We recently held a conference at the end of June on transforming professional learning. Justin was one of our keynotes. And that account is still free and open for you to access and see all of those sessions on demand. And then finally, I'd love to invite you to learn with us on the Learning Center. If you're thinking about possibly using SIBME for maybe instructional coaching or your lesson study process this year, as you need a tool to help that happen remotely, we've got free courses here to talk with you about how video can support that, because we see that as a transformational tool in professional learning and organizations, but also how can you use SIBME for that? So tons of downloadable resources there at learn.sibme.com. Justin?
All right. Well, I know we are at the end of our time and really have enjoyed the interaction with everyone who has been participating in the chat and thinking through what the upcoming school year is going to look like. Again, I want to encourage you to see the choices you're making now as design choices so that there is just less to worry about as we go along, because we know we will have so many decisions to make. And I think we touched on this earlier, Corey, but I just want to revisit the idea of protecting that face-to-face time for relationships. You know, we don't want to be the one who's just nagging people saying, hey, I need your form, I need your paperwork. You know, those face-to-face interactions this year are going to be more precious than ever. I think we've just got to really be there for people. We've got to really let people know that we care, that we value them, that you know, that face-to-face time is really going to be about coming together and committing to this work on behalf of kids. So thank you, everybody, for being here. And thank you, Corey, for working with me on this. I've had a great time planning this with you. And TJ and the whole SIDMe team, thank you very much for the opportunity. And I think with that, we'll wrap things up. Thank you so much.
Sounds good. Bye, everyone.
All right. Thanks so much.